In tonight's episode of the V2 Football Podcast, we'll be discussing the Champions League with English sides going 15 games with no defeats. We'll move on to discuss the Premier League, overachievers in Burnley and Watford, and with Leicester Craig Shakespeare being sacked, and controversial new rules which the FA have introduced in the Manchester Junior League.
And it goes from
I'm your host, Anthony Kendrick, and I'm delighted to be joined by Richard Hero Hudson.
Good evening.
You well, Richard?
I'm excellent. How about yourself?
Yeah, I'm good. Good, thanks. Peter Prickett will be joining us later in the show, but for now, I've got a few short stories I'd like to open with.
On tonight's Europa League game, I saw that Petr Cech conducted a pre-match warm-up, which involved catching table tennis fired out of a gun. Out of 31 fired, he caught 25. He blocked 5. He only missed 1 out of 30. It looked quite impressive. There's a video across. Yeah, well,
yeah, that'll be great when play football matches with ping pong balls fired at them.
Yeah.
That's what he's been going on, because he's not been the player that he was in the last couple of seasons. When he sort of moved across to Arsenal, everyone thought, oh, that could be the next step up for Arsenal. And he didn't really sort of live up to the Chelsea form. I guess they need to find footballs at him instead.
I guess he's 35 now. I think he's 35 now. I mean, I know keepers for a while, but he's certainly in the last couple of years.
35's not old for a keeper, though, is it?
Well, no, but then not generally in their prime. You know, they tend to be a bit older, like maybe for a prime. And then...
Yeah, well, you look at, you know, obviously, like, Buffon is perhaps an anomaly, but like Sir Van der Sar in the Premier.
I don't know if being in the Premier League would make a, you know, a significant difference of it being a more league, whether that makes sense.
I don't know. When United got Van der Sar from Fulham, everyone thought of that was just sort of really a stopgap for a year. And how many seasons was he there? Was it 41 he finished up with United?
Also, I believe you know, he's a 17 year old academy, that he's a big fan of Conor McGregor. If things don't work, and he'd love to have a fight.
I imagine a lot of people would like to see a few footballers sparked out in an MMA ring, but he looks a talent. It's probably the best young talent to come out through the Arsenal ranks for quite a while. So hopefully he sticks at football.
And just a final short from the show. Surely they need a goalkeeper, as they've got two key players they happen to play, and ineligible, which is... you know, what are the odds of getting Fleetwood where you've got two players?
You don't fancy getting your kit on?
I might have to, yeah. I used to go back in the day. Yeah, give it a go.
Send my lad along, he'll do all that for him.
See, you like him playing midfield.
Yeah.
maybe. All right, on to something a bit more serious. Discuss the Champions League. Just as a general point before we go into the indoor sides, just for the English sides, they played 15 games... and they've had no defeat. You know, it's not like the teams have played some jokers. The oppositions included Napoli, Dortmund, Sevilla, Real Madrid. You know, to come out of all those sides, and impressive.
And all five English clubs currently stand top of their groups.
Yeah.
That's what else have you got? You've got Barcelona top of their group, Besiktas top of theirs, and who was the other one?
PSG.
Oh, PSG are top of their group. But, yeah, it's... They're looking very strong, and you'd say apart from really PSG, none of the other big European clubs are looking that good at the moment. You know, Madrid only managed to get a draw at home to Spurs, which, you know, is a fantastic result for Spurs. Barcelona and Juventus haven't looked amazing at times. They've both looked perhaps a little bit wobbly. Napoli, I think Napoli are perhaps the Monaco this season, that they could perhaps go to the semis and stuff. They didn't disgrace themselves against City.
No, just to pick up on that though, it was a very entertaining game. I thought Napoli, their attack with Cali Insigne as well. It's a very fluid attack, and it it was fantastic to watch. It was a fantastic game, and I thought they were very, you know, they could have got a point out of that.
What you often see against City this season is that teams for the first half will really try and press against City, and they'll go against them for a while. And I know sort of Napoli conceded two early goals against them, but for 90 minutes they were still pressing against City. You know, not many sides can do that, and especially not many sides can sort of start to come back against City after its early goals.
Yeah, and well, I saw that Guardiola described Napoli as the best team.
Yeah,
fantastic. The thing I would say, that, you know, a surprise package, but they've only got 3-point games and Shakhtar 3 ahead of them. Get out of the group.
I think they still will. Yeah, obviously it'll be a big game, that game against Shakhtar. I don't know if that's home or away. Shakhtar aren't the shabby side either, though. That draw was made. Nobody really rated that group much, but it's, you know, Shakhtar and Napoli are both decent sides.
Especially you talk about Shakhtar, about go-to, you know, you expect them to be. But from what I recall, the Shakhtar v City game, can't remember the score offhand.
Yeah, you've got to give City credit at the moment. To come out of that group at the moment, you know, full 9 points, scored 8, conceded 1. That's going in. Was it Gerrard last night on BT Sports commentary? He rated them as City as possible winners, and I'd be hard to argue against that.
So of the English sides, would have the best chance?
Yeah, I would go there. Like, there's people argue the case that there's other clubs like United and Chelsea that have been in there and won the Champions League before, but it's not the players that are currently at those clubs for the majority that have done that. Mm-hmm. It's a few years back now. Yeah, he knows how to win trophies. I would. That Manchester City attack on its day can take down any defence. I don't want them to go on and win the Champions League, but I think they've got the firepower to do it.
Sticking with firepower, Liverpool got the biggest win ever for biggest away winner. It was against Maribor. They won 7-0, top of the group. You know, it's obviously a fantastic win. It's hardly the sort of opposition we judged on.
Yeah, the games that count are really the ones against Sevilla and Spartak Moscow. It's a good morale boost. It gets them great goal difference if it comes to that. But it was Maribor at the end of the day.
Is it not head-to-head comes with a change?
I think it is.
Yeah.
I think it is. There's still always a possibility that, you know, you have two draws and then it goes to it.
But yeah, it was also a good result for Spartak Moscow.
That was probably one of the shockers of the night.
Absolutely.
You know, Sevilla over the years have had an amazing European run. You know, perhaps more so in the Europa Cup than in the Champions League. But there's a lot of players there that know what to do on a European night.
I just want to mention Bayern Munich. I know we recently spoke about them in great depth when Ancelotti was sacked. They beat Celtic 3-0, and Jupp Heynckes back at the club after winning a treble and then retiring. What do you think of it?
He did the business so well last time. I don't know if it's ever decreasing circles on a third, you know, third time round. Could it sort of stain his legacy by a return? You know, they should easily get through that group. You know, PSG and Bayern Munich are in a different league financially and quality of players to Celtic and Anderlecht. But they've always sort of stumbled around the semi-final stage in the last years. I wonder if they could even get that far this time round.
Yeah, but as you've correctly said before, that the two big Spanish, Barcelona, aren't on it. You know, if they avoid PSG, they could well get to the final.
Well, they'll certainly avoid PSG in the next round, because they obviously can't be drawn against them. They don't get an easy tie next round of they won't get Arsenal this year though.
Stick with Barcelona. I saw that Messi made European goals as they beat. How many great words can you use? Such a great player.
Yeah, how many is Ronaldo on now? Because Ronaldo did beat him. I think he must be about 104, 105 now for Ronaldo. Not sure. I'm sure somebody will inform us. It's just fantastic to have had two players of such quality in the same generation. Mm-hmm. You know, either of them would have just been at the top of their game for the last sort of 30 years as the best player in the world, without a shadow of a doubt. And to have, we'll all be talking to our grandkids in, you know, 40, 50 years saying, we remember the time when we saw these two players together.
Just moving on, discuss Chelsea, which was probably the tie. There was some former Premier League players, Kolarov, Fazio and Dzeko, probably amongst Roma's best players. None of them particularly rated in that fantastic, especially Dzeko.
Yeah, that was a fantastic goal. Dzeko, he was never really appreciated by the City fans. Always sort of thought of as of one of those players where he'd need three or four chances to slot one away. But you can't knock his goal scoring ability in Serie A. He, since he joined over there in Roma, I think he's had one of the best records going.
Yeah, I think he was top scorer in the league.
Yeah. And you look at that group as well, though. That Atletico Madrid now played three on 2 points. A side that for the last few years has, has made the final twice, could be potentially going out of the group stage there.
It's one of those, we've got three very good teams. I mean, three very good, it's going to be very exciting to watch. And drew that game against Carabao, that could draw, really.
It makes you wonder as well, if Atletico go out of the group stage, will then Griezmann in January be thinking, I might go to United now?
Potentially. And moving on to, Marcus Rashford's goal of the game, the goalkeeper, the Benfica goal, conceded it. I saw that the United players concerned Lukaku, is a bit of a chat with him, tried to lift a very highly rated keeper from what I hear. But
yeah, he was the youngest ever goalkeeper in the Champions League. Mm-hmm. But I think he perhaps needs to head back in to the youth team for a while and just cop himself more than anything. I think the excitement of the night got to him, and he just looked like a wild child, hone your skills, lad, I think.
Well, he's only 8.
Look at going over to Serie A and the likes of, I know he's not really shown himself in the Champions League yet because AC Milan haven't been there for a few years, but Donnarumma, week in, week out in Serie A, he gets plaudits.
I guess for him, this was his one big game where everyone's got a lot of Portuguese, watched. And
it's one of them as well for keepers that they can be brilliant for 89 minutes of a game and just let in one howler, and that's what you're going to be remembered for.
Yeah,
I mean, it's the opposite to a striker. You can be have an absolute stinker for 89 minutes of the game. Do a Lukaku for most of the game, not really do much. Mm. Slot one in the last minute. That's the winner, and you're the hero for the night.
Probably the best result for a side was Tottenham, who went to Real Madrid and won. I know Real Madrid are very patchy. For a side to go there, mean feat, and it was a very good performance, I think. Hugo Lloris in particular impressed, and as well as anything, rather than just a draw, they actually went.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And that was when that draw was made. Everyone just basically said bye bye Tottenham. Mm-hmm. For that group, when you have Real Madrid and Dortmund in it, Dortmund have only got 1 point after three games, and Spurs are currently top.
Yeah.
You've got to think Spurs are pretty much through now, unless they get absolutely tonked at home by Real Madrid in the return leg. Is it next week or the week after? They're pretty much through.
Mm-hmm. And again, to play Madrid, Borussia Dortmund drew that draw against Apoel.
Yeah.
Just running through the other groups as well, I just want to say that Man City have got perfect records. For me, the surprise is Besiktas, who topped the groups ahead of a group with Leipzig, Porto and Monaco. I think that's a really Besiktas perfect record. So
yeah, and if anybody had said for the, who I would have thought would have been top out of that group, I'd have had it possibly the opposite way round for that group.
Probably, yeah. You could quite easily. It's one of those groups you wouldn't be surprised if the opposite happened.
Monaco, everyone's sort of darling of the Champions League last year, had such an amazing young side, but unfortunately got ripped apart in the summer. They're on 1 point. Leipzig, another team that a lot of people were sort of looking at last season after coming second in the Bundesliga. They're second, but Besiktas win up every game is amazing. That's off to him.
All right, so we'll move on to discuss the Premier League of cricket.
Good evening.
You all right, Peter?
I'm very well, thank you. Hope you guys are too, and indeed all those listening.
So with the Premier League, first thing on Player of the Week, so we had the four nominees, Wilfried Zaha, Tammy Abraham and David De Gea. So before I give the result, who...
I would say in terms of quality of performance, De Bruyne. But of course, I'm going to take the earliest opportunity possible to sit on a fence and say that I think Zaha's going to have a great shout because of the shock nature of that result.
I'd say De Bruyne in the... Well, he's been quality since he joined City, but since the beginning of the season, he's just taken it on to a totally different level. And he's just head and shoulders the best player in the league at the moment.
Yeah, no, I also think... I was thinking about it a lot. And, you know, when we say De Bruyne is a good player, it was the first time I thought this guy is the nominee of Paul Scholes. I think he's genuinely the best, probably the best midfielder. I think playing slightly deeper has made him an even better player, I think. In terms of the results, Kevin De Bruyne won with 58%. So, yeah, complete. It was five assists or something.
It was something ridiculous like that, yeah.
But yeah. And also, just mentioning City in general, it's 29 season already. They needed four, you know, 25.
Well, I think last time we were discussing together, we discussed that we should probably put an asterisk next to most teams and say, apart from when they played City. And that's just continuing.
Mm-hmm. And I'm a United fan, and it's hard to not like what City are doing on the football pitch at the moment. Because... Mm-hmm. They're demolishing teams, but they're doing it with such great football.
Yeah, some of the goals are unbelievable. And it does... It's what they wanted. It's bringing to mind what happened at Barcelona. And that's what City wanted all along. And there it is.
I just want to contrast that with what happened in the Man United-Liverpool game, which was a very boring 0-0 draw. I'll be honest, all the highlights... That wasn't very impressive. It was the last game or match of the day. I was waiting to watch it, and it was a very dull game. Jose,
the highlight of that was basically just the De Gea save.
Yeah.
Show a gif of that, and that's the entire game.
But is there something, you know, you see City absolutely demolishing teams. Is it okay for me to go to Liverpool? You know, grind out a 0-0 result like Jose Mourinho made a career of it, even when he's had a great Chelsea. In the big away games, that is his achievement, really, to get those.
He does like winding up big teams by doing this sort of thing.
I was sat watching the game with a United fan, and the point that I raised was, with City doing what they are doing, can United, if they are chasing the title, afford to look at any game and say a point is enough here? You could say this far out, maybe, but the problem where I look at it, come the end of the season, if they're 3 points behind or 2 points behind and they've decided to accept a point here and there, you could say, what if he'd gone for it in that game? What if he'd gone for it in that game? It's not like there's a big difference between a rip-roaring 2-2 away draw and we'll just have a draw.
Yeah, but then you could make the counter-argument that in a normal set of draws away at the big sides, but perhaps City could go on, the way they're going, they could go on to get a record. And that
should they be able to tell that it's not normal already and they do need to go and go toe-to-toe to have a real chance? But having said that, City won all 10 at the start last season and fell away badly. We're not 10 games.
I think the wheels need to badly come off the wagon for City this year for anyone to have a chance. You know, already so far in the first few games, they absolutely demolished Liverpool, which United struggled against, and they went to Chelsea and although the result was close on paper, they wiped the floor with Chelsea. I've never seen anybody go to Stamford Bridge and just toy with Chelsea like they did.
That's another game where the opposition arguably didn't attack them until it was too late. But then again, did Chelsea not have the opportunity to attack them because of their injury, but to Morata? But they are frightening. I think that's the right way. If you're playing against them, we're getting to the stage where teams have lost before they started the game.
And the fact as well, it's like at the moment, obviously, they've not got Aguero up front. They've got the likes of Bernardo Silva coming off the bench to join him, who, you know, is up there as a fantastic player. They've got so many options up front, yeah, that, you know, at 70 minutes, if a player's starting to get a bit tired, you're bringing down another world-class player.
I want to move on and talk about a couple of that are overachieving. Firstly, Watford, a very, very good win for them over. Beat them 2-1. I just want to talk about Richarlison won the penalty. The FA have deemed that he has no case to answer regards to that. It's the first for diving. The rumour is that it was a 2-1, which is therefore. Do you guys think should the FA have acted?
Thanks. I don't think it would. No. I think you can see there is some contact made. And if that contact isn't made, Richarlison probably gets to that ball as well. So I think it was a foul and it wasn't a dive.
I agree. I think he knew what he was doing, but there's no harm. That, you know, that's part of the game nowadays, that if you're taken down in the box, it makes sense for you to then make the most of it.
I've seen many others far worse than that are actual dives. And remember, we've got to remember that not every contact is a foul. And not every time a player goes over and it's not a foul, is it a dive.
So,
but this time, there was clearly a foot that came out, which the player couldn't go round. Well, maybe he could have gone round it if he really, really wanted to. But it was a darn stupid challenge. And it's a foul.
To clarify, going on perhaps being a foul, in your mind?
Not necessarily.
Okay. No,
I would say so. And there's always a difference between upper body contact and lower body contact as well. A trip. Now, trip can be, it can be quite small and still trip you over.
Yeah.
And when there's absolutely, you can see when the foot goes out and there's no contact and they're hurdling, it's not a foul. It's a dive.
Yeah.
You can see those ones. We've seen some appalling ones.
For me, I think penalties, I've never seen been fouled and stuff. The penalties have got to go down to win a
penalty. I agree. I've experienced it myself playing, mm-hmm, where I've received the ball inside the box, taking a touch, and I'm about to shoot, and I'm trying to get the shot away, and I've been fouled. Mm-hmm. I haven't hit the deck, and nothing's been. So when you feel that yourself, you've got to think, well, I might as well throw myself on the floor, mm-hmm, if they're not going to give it, and that's the problem.
I see that every weekend with my lad. He's always one that won't ever try for a dive or to get the foul, and he'll do his damnedest to stay on his feet, and it's often to the detriment of
him. So maybe if VAR comes in, it might change things and people might not have to throw themselves on the floor, you know, in the same way that it's changed cricket a little bit, and you're getting more LBWs given for the spinners. In the past, they just weren't given, and people didn't realise. You might see that happen in a few years' time if VAR becomes universal, but again, it's still an if. Until that day, players are going to have to put themselves on the floor if they really want the decision.
I just want to say about Watford, I don't want to make it all about diving, but the fact they're fourth in the... they've lost only one game, also beat Arsenal, the result earlier. It's a very good start for them.
And we'll put the asterisks there. Apart from another team who needs that asterisk, they've done really well. I'm possibly more interested in Troy Deeney's comments after the game, if we want to go down that road.
I was going to raise that next.
Possibly, yes. But it was, whether he went too far or not, what he said was really interesting. It certainly wasn't bland, and he definitely spoke from the heart.
Well, his manager's slammed him for it, though, hasn't he?
Yeah, because he knows that he's waved the red flag for the next game. And that was the other thing that went through my head when I heard it, was I thought, if they hear that, they are going to go through. But then, if he doesn't think anyone in that team has the cojones to go for them. He probably feels quite comfortable saying, come on then, none of you can do anything because you haven't got the balls to.
I saw that he did a question, and most of the questions came at him. He said there were two things I picked up on. Firstly, he said that Arsenal and that Ian Wright was one of his heroes. He said he's got a lot of respect, growing up.
It's a statement that I think most pundits on a Sunday morning would argue against Arsenal for the last few years. So I don't think he was saying anything that anybody else hasn't really said before.
No. I think it's quite interesting to reveal that a lot of teams, I'm sure they feel it when they go in against Arsenal. They go, well, we're not going to get... they can't match us in the physical battle. Let's make this a physical battle. And we've seen it for years that if they do go physically, it's rare that Arsenal come out on top.
Another side who have really overachieved so far is the Burnley. They're seventh in the, with West Ham. And, West Ham going down to 10. What make of Burnley so
far? Well, they've clearly been very good. They're away. They've managed to turn their away record around. I have long thought that Sean Dyche is simply a very good, very smart manager. And, there was going to be every chance that given time, given stability, if he could keep a team up, he could show that, which he has done.
Shame if he moved on from Burnley now. And I've heard rumours that Leicester are
being possibly linked with Leicester, yeah.
And I don't think Leicester, this moment in time, a step up for him.
No, I mean, arguably he'd have some better players. Leicester do have three or four players who are, if we're being cruel to Leicester, probably, but the unity, the squad, what he has at Burnley, is going to take some time to get that if he would.
And I think as well at Burnley, he knows he's, unless something drastically went wrong there, that he's got the backing of the board. He's already gone down, he's been relegated with them before, brought them back up. You go into Leicester, and if you have, you could keep them up from relegation, but you, as you've seen this season with Shakespeare, 8 games in or whatever, and he's already gone.
It could be an interesting challenge.
Ranieri.
Yeah. It could be an interesting challenge for him. You might look at it like that. Has he had to deal with the likes of Mahrez in terms of personality? People who might be gifted but sulky. He's had bundles and bundles of model pros who might not have that spark of ability, but are less likely to down tools. The manner that Mahrez has at times. So it'd be an interesting challenge for him. Whether it's something he really needs or wants right now, don't know.
No, I completely agree with what you and Dyche. I think because he's perhaps slightly less eloquent than foreign managers and he's not a fancy. No, I think he's fantastic. Yeah. Tottenham United and him, that says, they have the lowest average possession and then played a few and have faced them, blocked them over. So they've got a very distinctive style of play. It works for them. It's very effective.
Might be part of the reason Leicester are looking at him, because I wonder how different is that to what was successful under Ranieri, building up, setting up solidly and looking to nick things. I know there was an article about the secrets of Burnley's away success or something like that. And without looking, it does tend to be being organised, being disciplined and looking to try and take advantage of what little you get.
There's a point that they said that he's very methodical and that he was in one game, I think it was at Stamford, the steps around the pitch and measuring the pitch and apparently... But moving on to Leicester, I do see that Sean Dyche is favourite. Chris Coleman's his second favourite at 5-2. Some of the other names are Appleton, who's manager Sam Allardyce, Alan Pardew in the betting odds. Who do you
Alan
think?
Alan Kirbishley is usually in there.
I can't see him coming back. I've only written down the top five, but
he's a long way removed.
Anyone in particular you'd like to see come?
Ancelotti's unemployed.
Actually, Ancelotti's possibly not a bad shout. Leicester are not really a big enough club, but they've still sort of got a bit of a pull with having won the Premier League 2 years ago.
We should have, yeah, we should.
There's three or four players there that are of good quality.
Do you think
I said it tongue-in-cheek completely. I don't think, you know, if Klopp was to leave Liverpool tomorrow, I'm not sure if they offered it to Ancelotti, he would even want to go there. Absolutely top bracket. So I'm not sure that he's realistic for Leicester.
It's top bracket, but there's no clubs looking for anyone at the moment. He could just perhaps take it on and as a temporary contract.
That's true. He could take it till the end of the season if he wants to. He might just find a holiday, though. We don't know.
Look at beneath Newcastle.
Yeah, that's
about it. His stock had fallen a bit at that point, though.
Oh, I know. I'm not saying he was in his prime, but I don't think anyone expected him to join them. I mean, he was at Real Madrid before.
Who else? Thomas Tuchel, again, is out of work. I don't know that he would fit in with what they're trying to do at Leicester City. Mm. But they might do a Hull and find someone like Silva. They might look at who are doing quite well in their leagues, and they may not be particularly glamorously plucked them away. Why not have a look at Hoffenheim and their manager, or somebody else in the Bundesliga like that? It could be a possibility. These names that have been put out there, they do feel pretty bog standard. There's not a lot of imagination there, and I would like to think that a Premier League club would probably show a bit more imagination.
And just quickly, do you guys think that it was the right decision being in the relegation? He thinks the club, he said after the
fact. I've got no sympathy for him.
No, there's a little bit of karma to all this. Whether it was right or wrong to sack him, I think it was probably a bit early, but there is a little bit of karma to it, in my opinion.
Well, there'd also be karma at the end of the season. Leicester also went down.
Well, yeah. Who's Ranieri got a job with at the moment?
He's at Reims in France, who are doing quite, well, particularly well.
Is he? Okay, so I was wondering if the possibility of tempting him back might be out there.
I did look through the odds, because I was at a price, just not okay, aware, sponsored by.
Things must be going pretty well out there as well.
All right, well, we'll move on from the Premier League by discussing. So, Greater Manchester from coach, the Spectator, and all the squad. Richard, I'll start with you. What rules in particular caught your eye?
The some that I certainly agree with. I think that a lot of parents get far too involved in games. I've seen kids run around on fields with their shoulders hunched up because they just know after they've done something that their parents are going to be bawling at them from the sidelines. And that's just totally wrong on a football field. Mm-hmm. The one that I'm not a fan of is the mixed teams rule, which I don't know if Peter's for it or against it, but for me, as a dad of a fairly gifted footballer, I know I've seen him play mixed teams where he just gets bored and frustrated in the training session because they're having to go down to the lowest denominator on the team, do like passing to feet rather than passing into space. And then when it gets to a match on a Saturday or Sunday, he's trying to pass to a child who's just standing still. He passes to a child who he knows is going to lose the ball to a couple of seconds later if they don't pass back. He'll end up then having to run with the ball because he knows he can't pass to the other kids. And then the other kid will get frustrated because they're not getting passed to. Mm-hmm. Having an A and B side, for me, you've got players of the same ability playing against each other. The better kids get to train at a higher level. The lesser kids all get to play against other kids of their ability, and they come away happier at the end of a game.
I would say that try and run as near as possible to not having an A and B team. But there's a whole bundle of caveats that you can put on these. For example, the age of the... If you are looking at under 7 and under 8, there's not a lot of point, in my opinion, in having A and B teams because development can happen very, very quickly at those ages. The other caveat is how much flexibility there is within the league structure for moving players between teams. If there isn't a lot of flexibility, I would try and have it mixed. And if there is a lot of flexibility, then you can do it as and when needed. So if someone is in that B team and is outstanding, they clearly need a greater challenge. So let's move them up. So there's a lot of things that you can delve into here. And the other thing is, if you've got an A and a B team and they're both playing in the same division for some reason, and it does happen, then what's the point in having an A and a B team? But if they are playing a few divisions apart, then having that ability to move, and as you said, they might be playing against players they're closer to in ability, because I think it's more important about who they're playing against rather than who they're playing with.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of things there that to go. It is so many grey areas there. So much context is needed that it's hard to say, yeah, just have mixed teams, because, well, you need to know more than that.
I know from seeing my lad play that when they played in mixed teams, often it'll be the case that they put the stronger team out at the beginning of the game, and they could be winning 2-0, 2-1, or drawing come half time. The then equal amount of time for all the players, they bring on some of the weaker players at the beginning of the second half, and they suddenly conceded 3 or 4 goals, and it disheartened the whole team.
Then I would question how it's being managed in that case, because you don't have to do it like smarter than that in the way that a team is managed. You can make sure, if you know, and I've had it, I had a few years ago, we had 2 players playing 11 aside who were miles away. So I made sure they're never on the pitch together, and I made sure that certain other players were on the pitch while they were on, so that it wasn't such a big problem. The players were all aware that they weren't as good, but we coped. So there's ways of doing it. If you've got playing 5-a-side, so it's under 7, and you've got 3 players who are a long way off, there's very obvious things that are going to happen when you put those 3 players on.
Yeah.
And if you take, if you put them on all on at the same time, it's quite obvious. Now, of course, winning the game isn't the whole thing, but the thing is that the kids want to win the game. Whatever we say, the kids want to win. So if I was to take 3 strong players off and put 3 players who are a long way off, long way from their standard off, the players are going to look at me and go, what are you doing? Do you not want us to win this match? And if you don't, why not?
What do you think of the other rules on the 12 rules options?
What do I think?
Yeah, is there anything you're against on there? You're a huge advocate of futsal, aren't you?
Yes, indeed. So, if they were to change small-sided games to closer to futsal rules, I would have no problems with that. And some of these are. The slide tackle rule is an interesting one, because I believe there's different types of sliding tackle. We have what's called emergency defending, whereby it's that last ditch tackle, which can be a magnificent thing if done correctly, but then there's sliding in on someone when absolutely no need to slide. So
you could take it even further, and a lot there's been big push for no heading at under a certain age, hasn't there?
Yeah, there is, but part of that is to do with culture and the way that the game is played. You don't need to have that rule if you're doing a progressive style of play based on the ball being on the floor. You don't need a no-heading rule. So I know they've done it in America. I'm not sure that... I hope we don't need to do it here, because the game is changing. I like some of the other rules here when it comes to the retreat rule and the pass back rule, because I've seen the retreat line. I think the retreat line is a great thing, but then I saw it at the weekend. The goalkeeper passed it to the defender, who passed it back to the goalkeeper, who picked it up and booted it over the halfway line.
Yeah, I've seen that many a time.
And that can often be an instruction from the coach. And I just think, what on earth is the point of that? So these more skillful rules, when the goalkeeper has possession, opposition must retreat to halfway, goalkeeper must pass to own player in own half, fine. But when you add the pass back rule, and it's because goalkeepers need to practice their footwork, they cannot pick up the ball from a pass back, then we get them having to actually play. And when that ball is played short, that's when the opposition can come and apply pressure. And then we can have the goalkeeper passing out under pressure, which is realistic to what happens further down the line.
Yeah. And
those I'm probably the biggest fan of.
On Sunday, like, I think it's sort of twofold. It stops the goalkeeper just oofing the ball at any given opportunity down the pitch. And at the weekend, after my lad finished playing, we watched one of the younger teams play, and four goals against their team was just straight away from the goalie taking a kick out, wasn't the strongest kicker, went straight to the opposition, and they scored four times.
Yeah. Oh, I was told a story, whether it's apocryphal or not, it doesn't matter, it's still a good story, of a young kid who was in goal, and every time he took a goal kick, it went to the other team, they went and scored. Took a goal kick, they went and scored. After it happened four or five times, next goal kick, he just turned around and belted it into his own net, because that's what had been happening anyway. It gets the ball to the middle of the pitch again. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether it's true, but I can imagine a very frustrated, tearful young child doing that. Yeah. So I'm happy to see balls in the goalkeeper's hands. Go on, back you go, back into your half. That doesn't mean that the goalkeeper has to wait until they're all in their half to play, because he could see there's an opportunity to play because they're retreating. That's fine. But he knows that he's not going to have that heart-in-mouth moment, how far down the pitch can I get it, that it's safe. So I like those rules in particular.
Yeah, and like, use the example with my son. They've got to the age now where the retreat rule isn't used anymore. They've gone from 7-a-side to 9-a-side. And that in the league that they're in, that's no longer the case. So from seeing a team where the goalkeeper would have been passing it out to the full backs and the ball move up, it's just gone back to the old thing of basically the goalkeeper kicks it as far as he can.
Right. Well, I've got a team playing under 17s playing 11-a-side. So now I believe that the emphasis is on us to play how we want to play, which is by playing out. So now as a coach, I have to set my team up so that they can play out. That's the first. So yeah, they are in the right position. If they come and press us high, then option two, rather than, I don't put the fullbacks quite quick. Well, he puts his centre back. We have two options. It depends how risky we're playing. We split the centre backs or we split the fullbacks. So that's our first option, to pass it to them. And if we pass it to one side and they come and press, the ball goes back to the goalkeeper. That's great. The goalkeeper can open up because two players have gone towards the fullback and he can play to the other side and we're away. Or we have two players standing on halfway wide. If they come up and press, we've got that little clip. It's not the biggest pass in the world. It's a clipped pass out to those wide players. And then we can go and play from there. And then if none of that's on, goalkeeper's decision, he can just play long. But it's their decision making, and we've got to set them up in the first place to give them that opportunity to play out.
Yeah.
And then react to what the other team. I coached in an adults game as well, and the opposition were playing a 3-5-2, and their wing backs were really, really high, and their centre backs were really narrow. So I told our goalkeeper, look, we want to try and play the game, a short-based passing game, but when you get the ball, because of where their fullbacks are, don't bother looking, just kick it into those areas behind their wingbacks, and we'll get success. And we did, and we just overloaded them in those wide positions and won the game. Now, it wasn't the prettiest thing to do, but at that stage, it was about winning the game for these, because they're adults.
Yeah, we're playing to the strengths and their weaknesses.
We've seen a weakness, we exploit it. And now if the kids see a weakness and they exploit it, is that good decision making? I think it is. Now, if I've told them it, that's a different story, because that's me making them play in a certain way. But if I've said to them, have you seen something that their team's doing? Yeah, we've seen that they're pushing up really high. Is there a space? Yeah, we can use that space. How can we do it? Oh, maybe we can play a little bit longer into those areas. Okay. It's come from them.
It's questioning rather than instructions, Will.
Yes, and that fits with that no instructions. I've asked the question. They have guided possibly towards the solution. They might have come up with something else. Fine. But it's come from them. And that's, I would consider that their decision being made, not my will being imposed. And that's something that has happened a lot to young players in our game.
What's your thoughts on the old positions rule?
I don't think it has to be within the same game.
Oh, no.
I think it has to be and should be done over the course of a season. But I don't think to try and do it in one game is exceedingly complex. But I do believe that all players should have a go. Maybe not literally all positions. Does someone need to have a go at both left back and right? Because it's the same sort of thing. And if we've got a left-footed player, do we really want to try them out at right back? Not necessarily. So I do think they should all have a go, including goalkeeper. Maybe. Depends how old they are. If you've got an under-12s team and you've got an established goalkeeper, maybe he doesn't need to play outfield if he's been playing outfield up to that point.
I would say that it's a have a go if you would like in these other positions. I wouldn't be it's a forced thing.
To a degree, the only problem with that is most of the time they don't want to have a go. And they should, even the striker should try it. Because even if it's not with the intention of playing there, you get to know. As a defender, I get to know what I don't like strikers doing against me. And so if I'm a striker playing as a defender, when he does that, I find that really difficult to defend against. Okay, maybe as a striker, I should do that more often. It's just different experiences, different perspectives. You will learn from it, and they will learn from it. It doesn't mean their position is fixed. Having an idea of a fixed position at a young age can be quite damaging to a player. Because it can
I think it depends on what age are you considering then at this point? Because I'm just thinking of it in regards to my son who's in the under-12s. And he happily, he normally plays defensive midfield. He'll happily play across the back. He'll happily play on the wings. He'll never go in goal, even though he's not too bad on it. And he never likes playing as striker because he doesn't tend to be a selfish player. If he's in front of the goal and there's another player next to him, he'll pass to him rather than take the shot himself.
He'd be a striker who sets people up. That's all right. I'm not sure about the including goalkeeper up to a certain point. When they're younger, fine, no problem. Under 12s, I think there's value in people having a go at different positions. Again, not within one game, over the course of a season, have a go. Try it. But don't just drop it on a player from nowhere. You need to tell them quite early on, right, you're mainly going to play in this, and this position, but at some point this season, I would like to see you play a game or two in this position, just to have a go. And it's not the hardest thing in the world to sell, because you explain to players like about David De Gea playing as a central midfielder for until he was, I think he was about 12, about Theo Walcott having trials. It's great. Well, he didn't even have trials. He was a goalkeeper at Southampton Academy. The Alan Shearer story of him having trials as a goalie. Jamie Carragher playing as a centre forward and slowly becoming a centre back. If you explain these things to the kids, they are more likely to accept that they need to have a try in positions. Because you just don't know. You just don't know what a player is going to become, how they're going to change as they develop physically. Someone who's really quick at 10 might not be quick when they're 15, and that pace that they had playing as a wide player might not be there. I've got a boy in my team who played as a winger when he was younger, and when he hit 14, 15, he had no pace, but he had that ability to manipulate the ball. He became a central midfielder. at 15, 16, 17, he plays as an attacking midfielder or a slightly deeper midfielder, and occasionally he's played as a wing-back when we decided to play that way.
And you see professional players at the highest level move around positions nowadays.
Well, yeah, how long was it until Steven Gerrard had a fixed position? Oxlade-Chamberlain still hasn't got a fixed position. You know, it still happens. They do eventually find their place. I remember Paul Warhurst at Sheffield Wednesday having half a season as a centre-forward, being prolific, and he'd spent his whole career as a centre-back up to that point. Quite a big move to Blackburn after.
One of the greatest full-backs of all time, Philip Lahm, played across the back and in the midfield. And then be excellent in all of them.
There's someone has written a book called Universality about players, and saying that the future is about players being able to play in all sorts of different positions. It could be the future, but it could be the past, because if you go, let's go to the Dutch team, they could have played anywhere. The Dutch team of the 70s, even the Dutch team of the 90s, they had players who could play in all positions, and it wasn't a fluke. It was because they had experienced numerous positions at different times of their development.
Who was it that said about Cruyff that he wished he could have a team of 10 Cruyffs outfield?
I think Guardiola said something about Philip Lahm, something similar there.
It was 10 now.
They'd struggle with a no sliding tackle rule. As ever with rules, there's always good and bad, and there's people saying, good luck enforcing that. You could say that about any rule. You say that about any offside. If someone explained the offside rule to you as a new rule coming in, you go, good luck enforcing that one.
Yeah.
Good luck getting that right. Yeah, well, they still don't get it right, but the rule is there. And some of these rules, it's that thing about the culture of how we play at youth level not quite being right. So to fix it, we use rules, because rules will fix it quicker than education. And as ever, the real long-term education. So maybe when these kids become coaches, things will be different. Or when these kids become parents. So time will tell whether these rules are actually...
All right, well, that's been great. If you want to check out more questions of that nature, you can check out 2 Academy on Chris Lappin. Really enjoy that show.
Thanks.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it.
All right, well, you can check us out at V2 Football and our website, V2 Academy. Thanks for listening, Hudson and Peter Prickett.
Good night.
Night.